You're listening to the Rogues Radio Podcast. Evil geniuses, we killed them.
Welcome you to episode 10 of the Rogues Radio Podcast. My name is Dave Beatty, and for the last two decades, I've been a professional comic book artist and graphic designer. Some of my published credits are Batman Incorporated, Flashpoint, Wonder Woman, Superboy, and the X-Men. I'm also the co-creator of several independent comic book series that featured a lot of interesting creatures and monsters, which is kind of appropriate since we're in the month of October and Halloween is coming up. Some of those titles included Star Gods and Bushytails. And the most recently completed Last Train from Clarkdale. Joining me as always is my co-host, Mr. Lynn Workman. Lynn, please tell the listeners a little bit about what you've done as an artist and designer.
Well, since this is going to be the Halloween-ish kind of episode, I worked on tombstones for about 5 years. I did headstones and cemetery markers and that sort of thing. But my main day job is just screen printing. And I do graphic art on the side at night and on the weekends.
So on this episode, we're going to be discussing our favorite Halloween things, such as comic books, movies, artists, and monsters. So does this sound like an interesting topic for you too, Lynn, or what do you think?
Yeah, definitely. I was a monster kid growing up, so and I guess technically I still am.
You know, my mom didn't like me watching a lot of like monster and horror type stuff when I was a kid, so I was always kind of running around, kind of sneaking, watching stuff, kind of here and there. I do have an affinity for a lot. I guess not just for Halloween, but a lot of the things that come with Halloween. So this should be kind of a fun discussion. So it should be fun. So talking about Halloween, Lynn, I have worked on a couple of fun Halloween themed projects, quite a few actually over the years, or definitely projects that have involved monsters, but specifically Halloween themed. I did work on one of the DC Comics Halloween specials several years ago.
That definitely qualifies.
I think it qualifies. I worked on, it was actually kind of a Blair Witch kind of story, and it involved Wonder Woman and Wonder Girl and actually quite a few members of the Titans or the Teen Titans at the time. It's kind of an interesting story to work on. It was just one of those things they just offered for us to do it. And I was like, oh, that sounds cool. I think it was I'm trying to remember. I know it was after. Yeah, I think it was after Justice League Cry for Justice. I think it was after our fill-in issue of Titans that we did. And then, yeah, it was just kind of a fun little short story. I was kind of secretly hoping, I had my fingers crossed because they've been doing those Walmart 100-page editions, and I was kind of – I knew there was no way in the world they were going to pull that story out, you know, to reprint. But I was kind of going, maybe they might put it in that. But, of course, they didn't. But it's all good. Yeah. I checked out the DC 100-page Halloween special that has Swamp Thing on it that was at the Walmart. It looks pretty cool. So
yeah. Cool. I'll check that out. I like me some Swamp Thing.
So what kind of fun Halloween projects have you worked on?
Well, I did that. We talked about sketch cards and stuff last episode. And so, yeah, I did a monster set. And then I've done a couple of, they're technically Halloween art shows. I did one that was, it was all pretty much just villains. It was called It's Good to Be Bad, The Monster Portraits of Villainy. And that was at the Adam Shaw Studio on Broad Avenue. And I had about a dozen to about 14 airbrushed monster portraits or call them monster pieces. Had those there, and then I've done like a Sherlock Holmes show, and we did a Savad tribute art show, which Savad was the horror host here in town back when I was a kid. It was Watson Davis. He actually worked at the Malco Theater, which is now the Orpheum Theater, and that was the big movie house in town. And at that show, Jim Hall and Dean Zachary and Jerry Lawler and myself and a few other folks, artists around town, all did, you know, different tribute type pieces. All right, let's get into some of our favorite horror or monster comics. For me, growing up, I remember like one of my first black and white magazines I saw. There was like a, I can't remember if it was an Eerie or a Creepy or something, but there was like a Bernie Wrightson story in it. And I was like, oh my God, that's just amazingly gorgeous. And I immediately fell in love with Bernie's artwork. So I could say any Bernie Wrightson comic would be my favorite. But actual comic, I'm going to have to go with 30 Days of Night, the original one. Are you familiar with that one?
Yes, yes, I am.
Okay, because when I first read it, I was like, "Why didn't I? You know, why didn't anybody come up with this concept before?" It's like it's freaking genius. You know, the whole town of Barrow, Alaska, where there's 30 days of night. You know, you don't see the sun for a whole month. It would be a perfect feeding spot for vampires. So I just thought it was an incredible concept, and I love the painted artwork, and so yeah, it's spawned a movie, and it spawned several other I guess sequels or other storylines and stuff like that. But that I think that would have to be my favorite horror type comic. So what's yours?
Well, it's I kind of talked a little bit about it last, I think, episode or two before. But I'm going to be honest, Lynn, every time I think about it, I really like the monster as the hero, mm-hmm. or the monster as the misunderstood. For example, like Hulk or even Frankenstein. Like, I really like that idea the more I think about monsters. And I'm going to tell you, Lynn, I think my favorite monster comic still to this day is going to be the original Swamp Thing series. The original, probably about the first probably 12 issues or so that Len Wein wrote and Bernie Wrightson drew. I always keep coming back to that. Like, I really like that character. I like kind of the world that he inhabits in terms of the swamp. I've only really been in a swamp like a couple of times, mostly in the Scouts, and it was really creepy because it's just the whole place. I mean, it really is. Yeah. It's very much alive and moving and mm-hmm. disturbing. And I really like the idea of that kind of, that in the center of this is not only this this monstrous creature that's misunderstood, but at the same point, someone who protects, those of us who might venture into it. But at the same point, protecting his domain too, and I really like in the original comics how he really didn't speak, and his intentions were never really quite understood, and kind of the role that Arcane played, and it's just a really interesting concept. And I'm going to tell you that I've read a lot of stuff, and I've been thinking about it because I knew we were going to have this topic on the show, and I just keep coming back to it. I think Swamp Thing is probably my favorite monster comic book.
Yeah. Again, you can't go wrong when you put, Bernie Wrightson and Len Wein together.
Right, right.
It's just, they're just an awesome pair. But yeah, it's funny because I knew about Man-Thing before I knew about Swamp Thing. Because I'd seen him, and I believe in like a Marvel team-up or maybe a Howard the Duck issue or something like that. And then I found out about Swamp Thing a little bit later. And then I didn't realize that there were so many other, swampy type creatures. But, Swamp Thing is the king of all the swamp creatures, I think.
I think so, too. I mean, and it's weird because there's one that predates all of them. They say that this kind of the progenitor, which is the heap.
Right, yes.
Which you go back and you research that character, and it's a very unusual kind of backstory about how the heap came to exist. And I mean, you can kind of see where they borrowed elements and ideas and stuff in order to kind of, you know, create Swamp Thing. But at the same point, it's so very, very different. A lot of those Golden Age characters, they're so, it's not that they're not relatable. It's just they're so specific to the time period in which they were created. Mm-hmm. And it's weird, too, how some of them are kind of like Swamp Thing. They're not immediately, like, quote-unquote, the hero.
Right.
It's very much the misunderstood monster kind of idea, which that's the thing I always keep gravitating towards. That's the thing I always like about monsters, you know. We always kind of question their intentions, but I like it sometimes when it turns out that the monster is actually the hero, you know. Or maybe right. through no fault of its own because of what's happening, the monster saves the day in sort of a Godzilla sort of way, you know. I just love that kind of idea, so.
And then disappears back into the water.
right.
But yeah, I remember we were together the first time we ever met Bernie Wrightson. And that was at Wonderfest because we were hanging outside the con. Because we got dropped off and we were eating our breakfast, and there was a guy sitting over there smoking a cigarette by the trash can. I went to go throw my trash away, and I noticed his badge said Bernie Wrightson, and I immediately recognized his eyebrows.
Right.
Bernie's got some very distinctive eyebrows, and I went walking back to you, and I'm like, Dave, that's freaking Bernie Wrightson over there. And you go, no way, you look, and then about that time, he starts walking over to us, and I'm like, holy crap, Bernie Wrightson's coming this way. And he comes over, and I had like some model kits sitting there that I was going to enter in the model contest at Wonderfest. And he goes, wow, this looked really cool. And he saw like a Batman one and stuff like that. And we got to talking to him. And like, you know what, like 30 seconds, a minute later, somebody comes over and is like, Mr. Wrightson, we're ready for you now. And they, you know, walked him away.
Right, like, right.
Oh! But later, he did a panel. And they had him up on a stage with a drawing table, and he was kind of like, we were all sitting out in the audience, and he's like, you know what, this is kind of weird. He goes, why don't all y'all come up here, and I'll just talk, and I'll draw, and you guys ask me questions, and we'll just kind of keep it casual. So, okay, so we all got up and kind of did, you know, a semicircle around him, and he sat there and drew a big, it was like, what, 11 by 14, 11 by 17 size Swamp Thing?
It was a good size Swamp Thing. He drew it with a Sharpie, no yeah. preliminary pencil sketching at all, just went right yeah. into drawing it with a Sharpie. It was,
yeah.
I don't know if I'd be able to dub it off or not, but I have some old, I think it's a VHS 8mm emulator type footage, because I had a VHS camera that emulated 8mm or something, and I shot footage of him while he was doing that. I have to see if I could dub it off, but it was pretty amazing to watch him do that, because it was a fun day, and he's one of my favorite comic book artists. I mean, he has been ever. And I'll be honest, I loved his work from Swamp Thing, but also talking about horror-themed comic books, I loved his work on The Cult.
Yes, the Batman and the Cult.
Oh, yep. My goodness. It was the only time I ever felt bad for calling for Jason Todd to die. It was in that series. I was like, Jason Todd's not such a bad guy. Here he is trying to save Batman's butt. It's like...
Yeah.
Wow.
That was a gorgeous, gorgeous book. Yeah, I got my copy signed. I can't remember if it was at Wonderfest or either San Diego or Little Rock. I've met him a few times over the years. But yeah, I've got a photo of him with the Swamp Thing somewhere. I'll have to dig it up for us.
So probably my favorite monster or horror movie after all these years and all of them I've seen, the one I keep coming back to that still kind of freaks me out, that I still enjoy watching, is Fright Night.
Yeah.
I saw it on television late at night. I don't remember how old I was, but I was just kind of mesmerized by it because it's kind of weird that the vampire initially, when you see it, you know, there's kind of something going on, but because he's kind of preppy in the way he dresses and everything, I didn't immediately connect that this was exactly a horror movie at first. So when I first turned it on, it just felt kind of just like a standard kind of run-of-the-mill kind of movie. And as it went on, because back in those days, you would just flip channels and find something interesting or something would catch your attention. You would just watch. I didn't even know exactly what I was watching.
Right.
And I mean, my jaw just kept dropping and dropping and dropping before I watched it to the point, and spoiler alert for people who haven't seen Fright Night, which if you haven't seen Fright Night, you need to go watch it. The original one is amazing. This scene where I can't remember if it's the kid or if it's Roddy McDowall, who sort of kind of performs the Van Helsing type role. He stabs the vampire sort of second, the guy that keeps an eye on him. He's not really a zombie, but he's not really fully turned. I don't know exactly what he is, but he kind of keeps an eye on Dracula during the day while he sleeps. And he stabs him with a stake or something, and he just explodes into this weird gooey liquid. And I mean, I remember my jaw was like on the floor watching this, and it was on television. I couldn't believe what I was watching. And it was really late at night, and it's one of those things, it's like you always worry, like, is mom going to come in and see I'm watching this, you know? But the movie that always kind of sticks with me that I enjoy watching, you know, the music is kind of kitschy and dated and whatever. But I've just always really loved Fright Night. Have you ever seen Fright Night, Lynn?
Oh, yeah, definitely. I think it was one of those I caught on HBO probably when I was, you know, junior high, high school. Because I can't remember exactly what year it came out, but it was back when I know I was in high school.
You know, It's interesting, too, because I saw it several years later, not on TV, like on VHS, uncut. And it had some obviously more shocking moments in that than it had on the TV version. But they didn't edit the TV version a lot. I mean, it had a lot of stuff in it. I was kind of shocked. I think the biggest thing it had in it was I forget her name from she was on Married with Children, but I think, for a little while.
Right, the neighbor.
She was the girl next door. There was a bit of a, you know, vampire lovemaking scene or whatever with her. And that was sort of like, that stuff definitely was not in the TV version. at least not what they showed anyway. But, Fright Night. Really interesting movie. And what I'd recommend if people have never seen it, definitely check out Fright Night. So Lynn, what is your favorite monster or horror movie?
Well, design-wise, I love the original Universal Frankenstein and the Bride of Frankenstein. You know, I love Jack Pierce's makeup design for those. But my favorite monster and monster film would have to be the original Creature from the Black Lagoon. I think that's that's their strongest movie, you know, story-wise, acting-wise, you know, that sort of thing. Have you seen the original Creature?
Yes, I've seen it several times. I think probably one of the first times was on television. I actually think I watched that one with my mom because there was some of those things my mom was okay, you know, with me watching when I was younger. But I remember watching that one with my mom, I just thought, the creature is really interesting, and it was trippy too how they have the underwater sequences. You know, because in that, I mean, they're really underwater.
Well, it reminds me a lot of the, like the Jaws movie poster. You kind of wonder, is like, all right, did they get that idea from those scenes where she's swimming along the top and the creature's kind of reaching up for her and stuff like that? Right. But yeah, I love that movie. And recently I saw the original Frankenstein at the library here. John Bifus from the Commercial Appeal. He hosted it there, and they showed the there was a cut version that they did a few years after the movie was made, and that was what we saw on TV for a long time. And then they added back a couple of scenes. One of them was where Frankenstein looks over and picks up the girl, the little girl that's throwing the flowers into the water. And he reaches over and picks her up and throws her into the water. Well, the original one I saw, that scene was cut. But it was in this version. And honestly, I like it better, the cut version. Because Frankenstein is sitting there and you see her throw the flowers in. And then he throws one in. And then they run out of flowers. And he kind of looks over at her and they cut. And then they go to, you know, the town where the wedding's going to be happening and blah, blah, blah. Everybody's dancing and you know, have their leader hosing on and, right. and drinking beer and stuff. And then you see the father come walking through the town carrying the limp body of his daughter. And it was so much more shocking, you know, not knowing that Frankenstein picked her up and threw her in the water. Right. You know, you just go, oh, my God, he killed her. Wow. You know, so it was. There's times when I think it's cool to have extended cuts and extended scenes for things, and there's other times when I think, you know what? Sometimes editing stuff like that's better, because it's whenever they had Young Frankenstein, which is another one of my favorites to watch this time of year, when Peter Boyle's character, you know, he's doing the same thing. They're throwing the flowers in the water, right, and she runs out of flowers, like, well, what do we throw in now? And he just kind of looks over at the camera. and they cut, and I'm like, oh, that's great, you know, that's right. That's fantastic. So yeah, getting to see that again recently was a lot of fun.
I recently watched, I think, yeah, I watched for the first time. I had seen scenes from it, but I have never actually seen the original Dracula with Bela Lugosi, and I watched it recently, and yeah, it's. I think it's well shot. Mm-hmm. I think the thing I was most surprised at was, well, number one, I'm going to be honest with you. I wouldn't recommend it for people. I know it's a classic. Please don't burn me at the stake.
There are villagers now with pitchforks and torches coming towards you.
I found it to be, I mean, it was really cool to see kind of what spawned and what inspired a lot of things.
Right.
But I was surprised at how tame it was. It was more tame than I expected it to be, one. And then number two, the version I watched, it had almost no music in it. And without music, it felt like I was watching like a rough cut of the movie.
Mm-hmm.
So I wonder if it's just the version I watched. But
yeah, because I know I've got a version, because they released one back in the 90s that had like an orchestral score, but I don't know if that was added into the movie. I'd have to go back and check, because I want to say I had that on VHS, because I think it was before I had a DVD player. But yeah, I know there was a music score, but again, I don't know if it was originally in there or not. But I do know that there was two different Draculas filmed at the same time. There was an English-speaking Dracula shot during the day, and then a Spanish-speaking Dracula shot at night. And I've seen... you know, some scenes from it, but I haven't watched the Spanish version yet, and I need to, because I've heard that it's actually better than the Bela Lugosi. So.
Well, what's interesting, that the thing I took away from watching Dracula that I was the most surprised at was that watching the movie, I feel like that Keaton and Burton, that's what they were thinking of when they shot the first 89 Batman movie. Because if you watch the way some of the shots are set up and how some of it plays out, the way that Dracula is moving at times and everything, the way that it's very deliberate, and there's just something about that movie that watching it, knowing that Burton, you know, enjoys, you know, those films, I just feel like there was a lot of inspiration taken from the original Dracula for the 89 movie.
I think my two favorite Dracula movies, one was the Frank Langella Dracula. I really dug it because I was a lot younger when it came out, but I just thought he was a cool looking Dracula. But, and this is going to sound weird, but my absolute all-time favorite Dracula movie is Love at First Bite.
Oh my God. See, I was literally about to, because you were talking about Young Frankenstein. I was going to say, the one Halloween-type movie I would love to see, and I want to see even more having seen the original Dracula, is I would love to see Love at First Bite. Every once in a while, we have where I'm working right now, it's just like a it's not really, I mean, I guess it's an oldie station. I wouldn't consider it an oldie station. It's kind of hits. And every once in a while, they'll play, what's the disco song they dance on the rooftop to?
I like the nightlife.
Yes.
I like the boogie.
Yeah.
On the disco round, oh yeah.
Yeah, they'll play that song, and I think of Love at First Bite. And I love that scene where I can't remember the name of the character. It's been so long since I've seen that movie, but it's the jealous boyfriend, and they're in the restaurant.
Yeah, her therapist.
And he comes out, and he's like, but I know the way to kill a vampire. 6 silver bullets right through the heart. And he pulls out the revolver, and he shoots him over and over again. It does absolutely nothing. Yeah. And I think Dracula says something like, "You idiot, that's a werewolf," or something. Yeah. But yeah. I love that scene. It's hilarious.
That, and he goes, Bill, I love when they're sitting around at dinner and he pulls out the cross. Not the cross, the Star of David.
Oh, yeah.
The Star of David. And Dracula recoils for a second. and he says, "What do you think of this?" And he gets a good look at it, and he goes, "Oh, I think you should leave Cindy alone and go find yourself a nice Jewish girl."
Right.
Yeah, I love him. I love Renfield. Yeah, he's just, oh my gosh. You know, the scene where he comes in and he's trying to like burn Dracula, and he's like, "Renfield, are you smoking?"
Yeah.
George Hamilton is just, he's amazing as Dracula in it. I love that movie.
That's the one kind of Halloween type movie I really, really want to watch again.
Yeah, well, it's funny because Nikki, her favorite is The Young Frankenstein, and she'll quote it to me a lot. Yeah, so that's definitely one we watch every year.
No, I think it's Frankenstein.
Yeah. Well, it's funny. I was driving to go watch the Frankenstein movie the other day, and somebody passed by me, and their license plate said Frau. Oh, and all I could think of was, you know, Flucker! Because we had a guy at when we went down to Universal. Oh gosh, it was me and the guys from the haunted house. We went down there, and there was a guy dressed up like the Marty Feldman, you know, Igor. And I said, "Can I get a picture?" And he's like, "Oh yeah, yeah." And he was about to walk into a building. He goes, "Hang on a second." And he goes inside, and he opens the door and goes, "Blooker!" And so all of us went, "Woo!"
Yeah. That's hilarious. I think actually it's pronounced Igor.
Yes, it is Igor, yes. Why are we talking this way? Oh, I thought you wanted to. No. Okay, suit yourself. I'm easy. Yeah. I mean, it's so quotable.
Oh, Lord. Yeah, that movie is so great.
And I love that they used, you know, a lot of the original props from the Frankenstein movies in that. And it's, if you watch that and watch Bride of Frankenstein, it's amazing the detail that they, you know, were able to throw into the, you know, this movie that, you know, it's a comedy, but I mean, they played it so straight, you know, that it's just, it's a classic, man. It's fantastic. Okay, so let's get into some of our favorite Halloween art and artists. Again, this whole episode could be a long story longer on just Bernie Wrightson himself. I mean, he's the master of the macabre. You know, I love Bernie, but I'm gonna go a little different. Like I said, if I had to pick a second one, it would be Dan Brereton of Nocturnals fame. I love Dan's stuff. He's done a few Kickstarters lately for some art books and for some new Nocturnal stuff. So he would be my favorite, and I'd also say I really dig Eric Powell. I think he's really cool, and he does the Goon, and he's done several other horror-type stuff. So, Dave, I'm going to throw it back to you. What is your favorite artist?
Well, my favorite horror or monster artist of all time is going to be Bernie Wrightson.
Okay.
Because I've already talked a little bit about it before, but I love his work on Swamp Thing, but I also loved his work on Batman the Cult. But also, too, I have so many collections of books of his where, you know, they're like the old EC horror type looking stuff,
yeah.
little short stories. And
yeah,
I mean,
the black and white mag stuff. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Like, I mean, just all that stuff is just amazing. So he's going to be my favorite. Now, I do have a second.
Okay.
Because I feel like that Bernie is the master of the macabre, and we definitely should talk. Yeah, we should definitely talk more about Bernie here in a minute. But I'm going to go ahead and bring out my number two, and that's going to be Neil Adams.
Okay.
The reason I'm going to say Neil Adams is because I love a lot of his old – back in the days, you know, he painted a lot of the Marvel magazine covers.
Right.
And there was a really amazing one he did that had, like, a lot of the classic – well, the Marvel versions of the Universal monsters on it. Which was the Tomb of Dracula, the Frankenstein monster. It had a version of the creature from the Black Lagoon. And it's just this beautiful gouache kind of looking painting. But also, too, in addition to that, he published several years ago, I think, a book. I think it was called Monsters. And in it, it actually reproduced. Because, you know, back in the old days, they had the Power Records.
Yeah.
And you had the record, and you put it. We're talking about the old days, kid. You take a record, and you put on a record player, and then when you hear the chime, turn the page. You know.
Yeah.
Anyhow, they started off as records, and then they moved to tapes. You can listen to if anyone's curious about this stuff, you can actually listen to some of this stuff on YouTube and on the internet. But
oh, really? Cool.
Yeah, there's quite a bit of the old Power Records and the Peter Pan Records stuff actually on the internet, which I think is pretty cool. I'm glad some people thought to kind of archive it so people can experience it. But I think the thing that I was most shocked at that was in that Monsters one was, I guess, redrawn versions of the, like, this complicated, like, you know, Dracula creating the Frankenstein monster to protect him during the day, and then a werewolf gets intertangled, and it's like a whole classic Universal Studios monsters versus each other kind of thing. Kind of like the old Hammer horror, you know, Dracula versus the Wolfman or Dracula versus Frankenstein. It was very much that kind of thing.
Right.
And I find myself a lot of times that I'm having to come up or come up with or do scary monster stuff. I pull that book out and I look at it, and that book also contains in it a lot of his monster design work he's actually done for films and movies, too. Okay. Which, of course, Bernie Wrightson did a lot of that stuff as well. But so, and also, too, Neil Adams, if unless I'm mistaken, wasn't Neil Adams the original artist on Man-Bat?
Yeah, I believe so, yes.
Yeah, so Neil Adams is going to be my my second that I'm going to select. So,
okay, well, I'm looking at my horror section of my art books in here. And, yeah, I've got the Dark Horse's Creepy Presents Bernie Wrightson book.
Uh-huh.
And right next to that, I've got my hardcover of Bernie's Frankenstein book that has all the incredible black and white, you know, pen and ink stuff.
Right.
And recently, not too recently, it was just before Bernie's death, which he passed away 2 years ago now.
Yeah.
He and Len passed away pretty close together, but they were doing a Kickstarter for a Cycle of the Werewolf calendar.
Oh yeah.
And I got that because the Cycle of the Werewolf is probably my favorite Stephen King book, and it's his illustrations in it are just amazing. You know, nobody draws, you know, blood and gore and stuff like, and you know, better than Bernie does. So. But yeah, that was I got that calendar because it apparently Cycle of the Werewolf was meant to be a calendar at first. You know, they're going to do it. You know, and then it ended up. I guess their book publisher wanted them to do a book instead. They described it all in the Kickstarter, but I was just happy to get a big calendar with Bernie Wrightson art on it. So.
Oh yeah, it's cool. Yeah, his pen and ink work and the Mary Shelley's Frankenstein that he did, I mean, I don't think anyone's come close to touching that still.
No.
The quality of that work in there is so powerful and so, it just, I don't know. I don't know how to describe it other than it just every time I look at it, because I've got one of the reprint books and I'll open it up and I just get lost in it. Just the detail and the depth in terms of the shadows and then the intricate design work in terms of like the way the monster is portrayed, but also too in like the scenes of the laboratory and stuff, just all of the stuff in the background and just
the lighting's amazing.
Oh yeah. It's so powerful and so much tremendous storytelling in single images too.
Right. And one of the things I loved about the Cycle of the Werewolf was that each chapter was a different month, and for each month it would have like a pen and ink illustration. And I can't remember if it was like March or April, something like that. He had like one of like a field with a kite and stuff like that. And it was really just gorgeous black and white illustrations. And then each chapter had like a full color, painted piece, describing one of the scenes. And then usually at the end, there was like a smaller little illustration to kind of end the chapter. But I highly recommend Cycle of the Werewolf. The movie Silver Bullet, not so much.
Yeah.
But, it started off really cool and then it went downhill really quick. But I won't give any spoilers because there is a twist in the book, and so if you haven't seen the movie and you haven't read the book, I definitely recommend Cycle of the Werewolf. And if you can get the Frankenstein book, I definitely would recommend that. And I would kill to get a copy of The Studio.
Oh, with
Bernie Wrightson and Kaluta and those guys. I would love to have one of those, but it's they're so hard to find these days.
And one more horror artist I do want to mention real quick, someone whose work I've always really loved and enjoyed, who is particularly associated with a particular Halloween classic monster, is going to be Gene Colan.
Oh, yes, definitely.
Gene Colan's work on Tomb of Dracula, I think, is another one of those things that just kind of transcends and is kind of, as the years go on, standing the test of time, because he was so cinematic in his approach.
Right.
And I love it. He's another one of those people I go to when I'm trying to create a particular kind of a mood. And so I definitely got to single out and talk, and at least mention the tremendous work of Gene Colan.
He's one of those guys I never got to meet that I always wanted to. And thankfully, with the internet, you can see a lot of his original black and white illustrations, and they are amazing. I love that stuff. The way he could, draw a bat, silhouette of a bat was just so moody. But yeah, I love the Tomb of Dracula stuff. And he's awesome. Another artist I'd like to mention is Basil Gogos. He did a lot of the old, they're kind of like really bright colored versions of all the different, classic monsters. And I've got a couple of his books down here, but they're just amazing painted pieces. Another guy that's really recent, you can check him out on like Facebook or Instagram or something like that, is a guy named Daniel Horn. He's an incredible oil painter and sculptor, and just does amazing work. I like him. And there's Chris Mason. Chris Mason does a lot of great pen and ink stuff and caricature type stuff, and he posts a lot of his little Halloween doodles and stuff like that. But one of the things I really love is he does light bulb portraits, where he takes light bulbs and creates different creatures. And I've got a Beetlejuice light bulb portrait. He'll take a regular light bulb or different shape, like he did a Frankenstein one with one of those kind of the more flat topped light bulbs.
Yeah.
And they're just amazing. The amount of detail and he puts in those are fantastic. But yeah, look them up on Facebook, Instagram, that sort of thing.
So when I think about Halloween, there's a lot of classic monsters and creatures and things that are typically associated with Halloween. I wonder how different Halloween is for kids growing up today versus how it was for us, Lynn, because I remember when I was a kid, Like, one of the things they used to have, for example, was, like, the spooky Halloween sounds, like, on a cassette tape or something. You would put it in, and it would be all these creepy, scary kind of things, and you'd have the glowing red light of the cassette player, and your room would be all dark, and you'd be listening to wolves howling in the distance or whatever. So I wonder how different it is for kids versus for us. But when I think of Halloween, I think of certain kinds of classic monsters. I think of skeletons. I think of witches. Obviously, Dracula, vampires, the Frankenstein monster. These are the kind of things, the werewolves, that I consider as like classic Halloween-type monsters. What is your favorite classic Halloween-type monster?
I would probably say, like I said, but we've already talked about what my favorite movie was, but I think just the look of Frankenstein and how many different ways he's been interpreted. You know, it's kind of like with Batman. You know, you could draw him and put him in so many different situations that, and it still works. I mean, you look at like TV shows like The Munsters. And, you know, they played him as, you know, more, you know, funny, haha type thing. Or, and like, what was it the Monster Squad movie, know, and there was the Groovy Ghoulies, you know?
Yeah, right, right. You know? Most people are going to have no idea what you're talking about when you say Groovy Ghoulies.
That's what Google and IMDb is for. But yeah, I think he's very elastic. You know, and you can do so much with the Frankenstein monster. So he's probably my favorite classic one.
Obviously, my favorite is also going to be Frankenstein. I've kind of hinted at I like the misunderstood monster kind of idea.
Right.
But if you want to really experience and understand how much I like the Frankenstein monster, if you go to Bushy Tales, I think, issue one. If I remember correctly, I think the backup... I'm trying to remember, is it issue one or issue two that has this man, this monster? And it's my sort of salute to the Frankenstein monster. We had a creature who was very much the idea of the Frankenstein monster, and he kind of tied in to the Bushy Tales world and Chozen, who was the main villain. And it has a very creepy piece of art that's very, you know, horror movie and horror comic inspired. But yeah, the Frankenstein monster is going to be my favorite Halloween, classic Halloween type monster as well.
Yeah, like I said, he's just, you can do so much with him. And I also like, you know, the fact that, you know, werewolves, there's been so many different takes on werewolves. And I think it's kind of interesting too, how recently, you know, witches have kind of changed. You know, it was back in the, you know, the Puritan days or whatever, it was a very patriarchal type of society, and they would, you know, they would try to keep women in check, you know, and you hear about all these, you know, the witch burnings and that sort of thing. But it's, you know, you start looking at like pop culture, and, you know, I guess the earliest one I can remember, you know, as a kid growing up was like Bewitched. You know, where they kind of they changed the stereotype from her being an ugly witch, you know, like the Wizard of Oz or, you know, that sort of thing, to a very attractive, you know, witch. And I liked that. There was a story I used to read as a kid. There's a series of them, and I can't remember it off the top of my head, but there was a young girl who was a witch, and she rode a vacuum cleaner. And she had like these shoes or boots that she could walk like a mile each step. And stuff like that. I used to love those. But you look at like Charmed, you look at Willow on Buffy, and you know, there's just a lot of, you know, or Hermione even with, you know, Harry Potter.
Or the craft.
Yeah. There's a, you know, there's kind of a change of what we think of when somebody says witch.
No, yeah, and yeah, it's interesting because, yeah, I remember when they first started doing the whole the sexy this, the sexy that, and I remember, like, one of the earliest ones I remember seeing was the sexy witch, and all I could think of is, like, I think Elizabeth Montgomery beat you guys to that about 20 or 30 years ago easy. Oh, yeah. So.
Yeah. But, yeah, we had the teenage witch, Sabrina.
Yeah,
as a comic and that sort of thing. And so, yeah, I think it's kind of interesting how you can take these characters and, you know, do your own interpretation of them, or put your own spin on them, or change the tropes or whatever.
And I was going to say, before we get off the topic of witches too, besides Bewitched, my earliest recollection of witches, just because it has to be mentioned, is Witch Hazel from the old Looney Tunes cartoons.
Oh, yeah.
I think that...
I loved her, but yeah. Witchy Poo on H.R. Puff and stuff scared the heck out of me. She gave me the heebie-jeebies.
Wow, yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. Something about that nose and the wart and stuff. I don't know. It was just, she was creepy.
So as I mentioned earlier, I imagine that Halloween for kids today has got to be very different than Halloween was for us when we were younger. Because yep. I know that Halloween was like one of my favorite holidays, and I used to look forward to the monster movie marathons and all the decorations, and it's just something you just look forward to because it was very different from every other time of year. And it was a time that kind of celebrated, you know, monsters and creatures and the idea of being, you know, kind of scared, you know. And I remember, I know trick or treating has definitely changed because I'm pretty sure for me, man, it was just me and my friends on the street alone. Wandering the streets, searching for candy.
Begging.
It was very, very, I remember like in the Mid-South, man, it would get so cold with those winds. Mm-hmm. I remember just running around, and I've got my cape on and all that stuff. And I'm, you know, just searching for candy and hanging out and just being out like really late at night. And I just remember how that was. And I'm pretty sure kids are not allowed to do that
now. Well, it's funny because when we moved down here, the first thing I noticed, there were a lot of kids. We had what we called the Darwin gang that lived down the street from us that, you know, they were always building some kind of contraption and like riding it down the middle of the street. You know, we're just like, one of these days, one of these kids get. But we saw kids playing all over the neighborhood. And so I thought, okay, well, great. Well, Halloween, we'll stay home. Because a lot of times back then, or just before that, I was doing a haunted house. And once I moved down here, it was kind of hard to do the haunted house in Memphis and, you know, and all. So it was just, I was like, I haven't given out candy in forever. So I'd like to do that. And I think we had like four or five kids actually show up that night. Yeah. I was like, oh my gosh. And so, you know, the good thing was I had a whole bunch of nice, you know, the fun size Snickers and Reese's and stuff like that left over. But I think last year was the most kids we've had, and it was like maybe dozen and a half, you know? So, yeah, it's at least in our neighborhood, it's definitely down from what I remember. I mean, there was just like hordes of kids, you know. It was kind of like, have you seen the movie Trick or Treat?
Yes.
The more recent one, not the one with the kid that wants to be a rock star. But yeah, the one that's kind of has all the different stories that kind of intertwine. Well, that's kind of what I remember Halloween being. Our neighbors didn't decorate as nice as, you know, some of these Hollywood people can do in the movie.
Right.
But I just remember there being that many kids out, you know, and you'd pass your friends and, you know, or people that you knew and, you know, and you pretty much knew everybody in your neighborhood. And, you know, we would go over to like my grandmother's neighborhood and like trick or treat her neighborhood too.
Right.
So it was a big event. Yeah, definitely.
I remember it was just, because I think here at my house, I mean, we kind of get about the same thing. It'll be a couple dozen kids. They're really kind of spaced out. Not spaced out, you know, whatever. Mm-hmm. But I mean, they're just kind of, you'll get like a large group of them and then nothing will happen for several hours. And then, you know, two little kids will show up and then nothing will happen for 4 hours. And here's, you know, 15 kids all together, you know, some of them not even in costume, just looking for candy, you know.
Yeah.
It's very different than, it was just, I just remember it was just, everyone was on the street. And you're right. It was like, you kind of knew your friends or you knew people from the neighborhood. When I was younger, my mom used to make a big production out of it, and she actually got a permit from the city or whatever, and her and a lot of the parents would get together, and they would actually shut down our entire street.
Oh, wow.
And each house would do like a different kind of a game or activity.
Mm-hmm.
So like, you know, you're bobbing for apples, or there's a beanbag toss, or there's all these different things, or there's like a cakewalk with the Monster Mash music or whatever. And yeah. You went from house to house and you did all these different kind of activities. And then you got candy at each one. And part of the reason they did that too is because there was that scare when I was little too, where they were finding, you know, things in the candy.
Right.
And I'll be honest, I never found anything like that. And I don't know anyone who ever did. So I wonder if it was just sort of something that got started and it's kind of like a rumor or whatever. But you heard things about, you know, people finding drugs and razor blades and all kinds of crazy stuff.
Yeah. I just found like good candy and crappy candy. You know?
Yeah. Yeah. And for me, it was the same thing. I remember the crappy candy I looked forward to the most was it was like a toffee with the peanut butter in the center. But there was mm-hmm. always a lot of that. And that wasn't the best, but it was pretty good. You know, as long as you got the piece that had a decent amount of peanut butter in it, that stuff was pretty good. And of course, the high-end stuff was always like the little Snickers bars or the little, you know, Hershey's or whatever. Those were always the best. So
yeah. Mom usually got my candy corn. She liked it more than I did. So I usually let her have that.
I liked the pumpkins when I was a kid. Now I'm an adult. I can't have them. But I always like the little pumpkin guys. I always kind of like thought those were pretty good. So, it was a very different time. I imagine for the kids today, it can't be even remotely the same thing. Because for them, I mean, they get to experience like Halloween like all year long if they want. So,
pretty much. It's kind of weird too, though. Is like it seems like a couple days after the Halloween decorations went up, the Christmas stuff started going up at stores, you know. And I'm like, can we get through Halloween first? You know, it's because usually they would wait till just right around Thanksgiving before they started putting the Christmas stuff out. But now it's, you know, it's they got Christmas, you know, and the Halloween time is shrinking.
I saw the same thing. It was so weird because we're still quite a few days out from Halloween.
Oh yeah,
and they had at the Walmart here in the town where I live. When I always go in through the garden center because I just find it's easier to go in and out of the garden center.
Right.
So I go in the garden center, and then they have sort of the seasonal stuff that's on the back end of the Walmart. And I do go other places besides Walmart, everybody. So, and we are not sponsored by Walmart. It's just where I wind up going a lot of times.
Yeah.
And I walk along this back wall, and it's always seasonal. And they had all kinds of like Halloween candy and whatever, like all the way down there. And it was like that for about 2 weeks. The other day, I had to go to the Walmart to pick up a couple things I needed for the week and, you know, grocery type stuff and whatever. I come walking in there and all it is Christmas decorations. I'm like, dudes, like, it's not even, you know, and it was weird too because they were already doing like their Thanksgiving food drive stuff.
Yeah.
I'm like, this is not at Walmart, but just on the radio, they were pushing, they were doing their food drive and everything. And I'm like, dude, it's not even Thanksgiving yet. Like, we're not even past holiday. It seems like everyone's in a big hurry to get through the holiday season this year. It's like, can we just get it over with now and move on?
Yeah, I mean, Columbus Day wasn't even over yet.
I know. It's like, is that a Columbus Day food drive? What the hell?
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah. Well, it's like when I was a kid, and you weren't that far behind me. You know, every year there were certain things that would show up on TV, and that was the only time you were going to see them, you know, like Wizard of Oz. There was like, you know, the different, like the Great Pumpkin, Charlie Brown and stuff like that. You know, you didn't have on demand or even VHS back then.
No.
And so it's like, if you didn't see it that night, you missed it. And I remember the Kiss Meets the Phantom of the Park was going to air on Halloween, and I was all set to stay home and watch that because I was all about me some Kiss back in the day. And my mom goes, "Oh, we're going up to your grandmother's lake lot and in, you know, Roger Springs, which is, you know, it's basically, it's literally the Sticks. Okay. Like she had a trailer
Land. The band.
Not right? The band. No, it doesn't. Yeah. We're still talking about Kiss.
Okay. All right.
Yeah. But it's out in the middle of nowhere. And they had, she had a trailer out there and had some land. And then they had there was a clubhouse and a pool. And there were some people that had houses built around the lake and stuff like that. And that's where we went. We spent a lot of our summers, but they wanted to go up there in October on Halloween when Kiss was going to be on TV. Completely just like devastated. I was like, oh, so I mean, you've ruined my Halloween. You're taking me away. And I don't want to do this. And so we get there and the clubhouse has a TV. And I'm like, please tell me you can get this channel. Please tell me we get reception here. And I turned it on and it had just started.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. So I got to see it and, I have to say I was a little disappointed in the actual thing, but it was cool to see Kiss on TV. You know, it's not something you saw every day. So, I mean, what were some of the things you remember that if you didn't catch it, you missed it?
Well, I definitely remember the Halloween specials for sure. But in addition to that too, I also remember, and it was interesting because it was like appointment TV viewing back in those days.
Right.
I liked watching the Peanuts. It's a Great Pumpkin. I liked seeing that every year, and I looked forward to that. But when I was a kid, like Garfield was new. I know for some people they've grown up with Garfield. He's not really new, but it seemed like when I was a kid, like Garfield was breaking big. So I remember like the first Garfield holiday special that was Halloween themed, where he was like the pirate.
Okay.
I remember watching that one. That was fun. I liked trying to catch that one every year. And but in addition to that too, like around that same time, like around Halloween, they would sometimes do like the monster movie marathons.
Right.
And they would take a bunch of and some things that made sense, you know, like King Kong, the original Frankenstein, stuff like that that made sense. But then throwing in other things that in hindsight it's like, well, I kind of see that. But at the same point it's like, you know, Jason and the Argonauts, for example. You know, right. It makes sense in hindsight, but at the same point, it's not something you would typically associate with Halloween.
Right.
And then there's one movie in particular I remember seeing like almost every single year. I never hear anybody talk about. I never see anything for it. I wonder, like, did it really exist or did I imagine it? Was this really creepy movie about gargoyles?
Yeah, I don't remember if I saw it, but I do remember hearing people talk about that one.
It was really disturbing, and it used to be. It seemed like around Halloween, like it would always be on TV. I remember seeing it several times, and that one was always like in rotation with that weird alligators, like in New York thing with the giant mutant alligator would like come out of the sewers in New York.
Right. Yeah.
Remember Alligator?
Oh yeah.
That was another one of those. And things like Mighty Joe Young. And I just remember being like a lot of creature feature monster, you know, type stuff. They would do like those marathons around Halloween. So,
yeah, my birthday is, you know, right around Halloween. And so is your anniversary. Yeah. And so growing up, you know, my birthday, which depended on where it fell in the week, if it was, you know, closer to Halloween or if Halloween was in the middle of the week, then, you know, we celebrate my birthday on the weekend or whatever. But, you know, I was born on the Day of the Dead. So it's really, you know, having my birthday party on Halloween was always fun. And when Nikki and I went on our honeymoon, I got to go on a cemetery tour on the Day of the Dead. So, yeah, you know, for my birthday, I went and visited a cemetery. Yeah. But, yeah, it's, I think, yeah, again, as I don't know what the kids, if they're missing anything or not, but I definitely Halloween is the most nostalgic of the holidays for me. And even with like the Bugs Bunny cartoons and Gossamer, Witch Hazel and those type of things, I think of them very fondly.
So I want to thank you for listening to this episode of the Rogues Radio Podcast. Again, I am one of your hosts. My name is Dave Beatty. had a fun conversation here with Lynn, talking about a lot of favorite Halloween things, lots of tricks and treats. But we were talking, and for the next episode, we want to kind of keep this conversation going a little bit because it's kind of fun and interesting. But we want to talk about the connections kind of between monsters and monster movies and Halloween and actually science fiction movies. There's a lot of connections there that could be made, and maybe there's a lot of interesting movies and as well as monsters from science and films that maybe should be more closely associated with Halloween, at least in our minds anyway. What do you think about that, Lynn?
I think that should be fun. Yeah, because I mean, there was a lot of things we didn't, you know, get a chance to get to because, again, we're trying to keep it from being long story longer. The saga continues. But I definitely think that'll be a lot of fun to talk about.
Awesome. Awesome. So I would like to encourage you to go to my website, see some of the art and stuff that I've done. Definitely check it out. On my website going up pretty soon, I'm going to have some print copies available for purchase for The Last Train from Clarkdale on my website. So you can definitely check that out there. I think I'm going to be doing cool monster and ghost and zombie sketches on the inside covers to make them kind of fun and cool and collectible. I'm hoping people will check it out and it'll encourage them to pick up a copy of the book and definitely maybe get into that. So, and you'll be able to learn more about this and find those at my website at davebeatty.com. And again, that's www.davebeatty.com. And Lynn, where can people go to learn more about you and see some of your amazing monster paintings that you've done?
Well, you can find most of my art at the lynnworkman.com. That's Lynn, L-I-N, workman.com. Just look under paintings or sketches or sketch cards. There's a lot of different monster stuff in there. And I've got my Scared Silly cartoons that are a lot of the classic monsters and some of the more recent ones. And you can also find me at Half Geek Will Travel. I've got a lot of Halloween related stories and trips in there. And you can also find us at roguesradio.lisbon.com. You can follow us at Twitter at @radio_rogues, on Facebook at Rogues Radio, and on Instagram at Rogues Radio.